We're live.
Hello and welcome back to another Miguel Ferrer is our vice president, and that is awesome episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
My name is Hermano da Silva.
Walter Vinci.
What we'd like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all our lists of shame. And if you'd like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback.
Oh.
Did you guys notice a certain movie was added to Netflix Instant that I kind of inclined you to watch?
I did not notice.
I think I sent you a text. Hermano, do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. I haven't gotten around to them. I'm actually going to try to do that this week.
And that would be a rewatch of?
The Cabin in the Woods.
Right. We've had some discussions on Twitter regarding this film, and it came up that two of us on this show did not enjoy it. And if you remember, it was actually on my top 10 list of the year.
That's right.
Okay.
So a lot of top tens
yes,
of the year for a lot of people.
So we asked for a defense of this film. And none other than Marcelo Pico, or at Framed Panda, sent us an email.
Okay.
I will paraphrase his email. Bear with me. The Cabin in the Woods is a smart deconstruction of the horror film that doesn't parody the tropes or the genre, but pays tribute to them. Within the first scene, Cabin reveals its clever twist to the traditional format in the form of two engineers who are pulling the strings. Without this element, it would be just another simple horror flick. The technicians, or the engineers, clearly represent the two screenwriters of Cabin, Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon. The technicians must save the world by sacrificing the kids to appease the quote-unquote ancient ones. Goddard and Whedon see themselves as the technicians, as they see the audience, the violent, hungry masses, as the ancient ones. Cabin's theme is that we, the audience, need violence. The technicians have done this many times before and even dream of branching out to different angles of the same setup. This could easily represent Whedon's or Goddard's desire to branch out and write and direct movies that aren't the same old thing, but it turns out that they aren't commercially feasible. The entire operation running the scenario is akin to a film crew. Actors, makeup, and special effects artists are represented. It's no simple parody, but a deconstruction of the horror movie genre through the eyes of the filmmakers of the movies themselves. They create slasher movies to appease the audience by following the same rules handed down through generations. They don't fully mock, they respect the game, and their passion for the terror comes through. That is why The Cabin in the Woods is a worthwhile film. There's more than just what is on the surface. Thoughts?
All right, well, if that's the case, if it's supposed to be like a deconstruction, then why do the engineers have to meddle so much in the affairs of the people in the cabin? You know what I mean? That's like probably one of my biggest, like when people say it's a deconstruction of the whole thing, where they go, oh, when one of the characters says, when Thor says, let's split up, and they go, yes, that's a great, you know, like, we should all stay together.
Yeah.
And try to find a way out of this.
Yeah.
Then he walks by a fly, goes, psst, and he goes like, no, we should all split up. And they all go, yeah, sure, we should.
Right, because they need to motivate the people in the cabin to follow the standard routine that that will lead them to kill themselves, essentially.
Yeah, that just seems really Matrix-y to me. Like, they're basically like people who are still plugged in, and you have the guys who are running the whole show, the two technicians. Well, my favorite part of the movie, by the way.
Sure.
I just love watching their back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And I could have been, you know, I probably would have loved this movie if it was more of the technicians, like, watching shit happen in the woods.
There was a lot of them, actually.
As it, like, because those guys, like, made the movie, like, more, like, their back and forth banter about, like, oh, I'm expecting a kid, blah, blah, blah. Oh, guess what you're in for, you know? And it's like, oh, man, not the I really wanted the merman. Never get the merman. Like, those parts were cool, but, like, when they're directing the actions of everybody else, that doesn't really feel like a deconstruction. It's basically like, oh, we're just going to have to do this way.
Well, that's...
I would have liked it
that's
more...
That's the point, because...
I would have loved it more if staying together was the wrong decision that time.
Well, and that's what ends up happening by the end of the film.
Yeah.
Actually.
I'm still going to go off of my initial reaction to it when I saw it on the theater. And to me, I'm like, he's kind of convincing me with his argument. But then he went as far as to say that then it never gets to a point where it completely makes fun of the genre that it's in, and I don't agree with that at all, because I think it does in a lot of ways. There's a scene Wally just said, there's a scene later on in the bridge where a woman is getting, like, smacked against the bridge over and over. That's a spoof from a Friday the 13th scene where Jason is in a hologram and he's smacking a girl in a sleeping bag over and over.
Which is a takeoff from another Friday the 13th movie where he actually kills two people in a sleeping bag, whacking them against a tree.
Against a tree. It's a spoof. Like, there are a lot of moments in this movie that I think are direct spoofs, whether or not they want to admit it or not, that I think are directly lifted from other movies. The entire movie is pretty much a spoof of the original Evil Dead. Like, it takes tropey characters, makes fun of how they're normally depicted in other horror movies, and then tries to be smarter than it is, and I don't agree that it's the movie's a deconstruction. And
I just think that you're applying the word spoof wrongly in this case.
I think deconstruction is implied wrongly in this movie, for this movie. I don't think it's as smart as everybody thinks it is. I mean, it didn't play to audiences because... Not because everyone in the world is stupid and they didn't get it. It's because it just wasn't a well-done movie. Like, everyone just deemed it highbrow, and it's smarter than everyone, you know, any other movie to come before it. And it just totally destroyed the horror genre, is, like, things I heard thrown around to that movie. And I don't agree at all. Like, not even close.
So, you know what I consider kind of a deconstruction of the horror genre is Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Because they basically take, like... The things you normally see in a horror movie, like a madman running at you with a chainsaw, and, you know, where he's running around with the chainsaw and he's trying to get rid of, you know, a bunch of bees, and the kid's running and killing himself, you know, in the process. That seemed more deconstructive to me, because, like, it seemed more accidental, as opposed to, like, if it was a deconstruction, I would love to have seen, like, yes, we should all stay together, and then they stay together, and then something, you know, insane happens that maybe kills, like, a couple of them at a time. Or maybe we should have split up. You know what I mean? Like, because that would have been great to hear somebody say, if we split up, this probably wouldn't have happened. I'm trying to do the best that I can. You know?
I loved Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. I thought that was a clever twist on a horror movie where everything's just a big misunderstanding. Like, that was clever. They took a horror movie, said, we're going to do something different, and it worked. I don't feel the same way about Cabin in the Woods, at least from a first-time watch.
I will... take a look at Tucker and Dale. It's one I haven't seen yet, so I will take a look at that. I know Wally has spoken very highly.
But I'm still going to go back and rewatch it with a different set of eyes, because I still feel that I was misled by the trailers.
And the marketing.
And the marketing for it. And that certainly, and I mentioned this before in a number of different episodes, that certainly colors my expectation going into a movie. I can't go into a movie expecting nothing. Like, I don't have that ability to go, I'm just going to walk in with an open mind. I walk into every movie with, like, all right, I want to see something. Like, show me, this is what you show me in the trailers and in the commercials for it. I'm ready. Like, let's see something cool. And then when you kind of go off track like that, I hear later on, like, oh, it's supposed to be like this is what they were going for. I need to go back and re-see it.
Well, I mean, don't you think that,
because this movie has a big issue with me.
Yeah, but don't you think when a movie subverts your expectations that it can be appealing at times?
Of course, when I'm pleasantly, I love being pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
But in the case of Cabin in the Woods, like, they were kind of making it out to be like, what's the secret of the cabin? You know, with the poster, and it had the puzzle.
Well, I'll tell you another movie that I could say is similar in how it was marketed was Drive. Drive was marketed as this big kind of action movie. You know,
and I love away. Every minute
yeah, no, of that so movie. We all do. All three of us do. But the way it was marketed is completely different than the way the final product is.
Yeah, but I didn't see any trailers for Drive until after I had seen the movie.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because I had read on a number of sites, like, if you want, you know, really want to appreciate it, don't see any of the... Yep. I think even you totally, like, you know, backed me off. Right. Like,
I didn't see,
like,
any trailers. Said,
like don't yeah. watch the... If you see any trailer, like, try to avoid the trailers for it. And so I found out, like, when I was going to see movies around that time, like, oh, well, which theaters are running, like, a Drive trailer? So I would not go to those particular movies until after I had seen it. And that movie, I didn't know what to expect walking in. I was walking in blind, mm-hmm. and loved every minute of it. I think I probably might not have liked it as much if I had seen all the, you know, the trailers with the it's crashes possible. and all that stuff, it's thinking it was possible. Like, a high speed action movie instead of, you know, something far more restrained.
Anything else you want to add, Hermano? Or should we just move on?
That's it.
Okay.
This will be in my year and a next week, probably, if all goes well, to rewatch Cabin in the Woods now that's available on Instant.
In this episode, we'll be talking about the newest Marvel Studios film, Iron Man 3. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I will go first. I have three movies to talk about. First one is called The Terrorist from 1998. It is an Indian film, and it's about a young female terrorist who goes on a suicide assassination mission, but her resolve to complete it is put to the test. And it's a very interesting concept, a very cool concept. However, the execution, I don't think, is
that's what you did there. No.
It is really... it didn't really finish the product. It doesn't seem like a finished product, is what I should say. It may have had to do with the DVD audio transfer, because there was a... Of course, there's subtitles, but even so, a lot of the music was way too loud compared to... the voice, you know, the vocals, and so I think there was something problematic with the mixture when they made the DVD, but otherwise it is even parts of it that are filmed, it kind of looks a little amateurish. I can't fully recommend this movie because it doesn't seem like a finished product, but I really respected the idea of it because she's really an anti-hero. She is part of this rebel group in India who is sent on to assassinate a political leader that will, you know, kind of change the tide for whatever their you know, whatever they're trying to accomplish, you know. And so you're rooting for you know, this bad person, but you know, something happens along the way where she kind of sees things through a different light, and I just wish the ending was a little bit more ambiguous. It seemed like they were ready to edit it a certain way, but maybe they didn't have kind of, you know, the gumption to really do that, or maybe India has some sort of censors, you know, where that had required them to end it a certain way. I don't know. So I would give it a kind of a mild meh. Next, I'll talk about a movie I revisited that was actually on was First Time Watchers Movie of the Year last year in Looper.
Oh.
So it's pretty funny. This is the first time I revisited it since last year. And it's pretty funny watching a movie with somebody who isn't as into the movie as you are. So... I'm watching it with the wife, and I could tell within the first 20 minutes that you know that feeling.
That check, you can see that checking out look expression.
Yes, or she loves to just nod off, you know. So I could tell that she was either nodding off or just wasn't paying attention. So, but she had wanted to see it too. But it's tough because there's kind of like a tension in the room, or just you know an awesome part's going to come up, and you want that person to notice it.
Like, wow,
yeah, but they just don't have the same reactions as you. So it was kind of tough, you know, rewatching it with somebody in the room that wasn't nearly as into it as I was. But certainly in the second half of the movie, which is probably my favorite part of the movie, I was able to kind of ignore that and just really get myself into it, and I really still love this movie. It's really well done. It's really just so well executed, and
did she at least have a reaction to when they get a hold of the guy from the past and they start doing things?
No.
Really?
No. Yeah, I know. I said right afterwards, you didn't like it, did you? And she's like, yeah, it was okay.
Oh, but, man.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. And finally, oh, well, yeah, that's a yay, of course. finally, I'll talk about a movie that was on Walter's top 10 of the year, I believe.
Which one?
John Dies at the End?
Yes.
Okay. I think I can see why it was on your top 10. However, talking about a film that wasn't fully complete, honestly, I think this movie borders on being like... straight to video or a sci-fi movie, because it probably had a lot to do with the budget, you know, and there are special effects that they were trying to get, but it's also not just the special effects. It's the way the movie is edited and structured. It's so odd. So, with people unfamiliar with this movie, it's a new street drug that sends its users across time and dimensions has one drawback. Some people return as no longer human. Can two college dropouts save humankind from this silent, otherworldly invasion? So, I got that these two guys were friends and they were co-workers, essentially?
Yeah, I believe they're actually roommates.
Okay, well, they have the same job, or their mission. See, the thing was, I didn't get what the whole thing was in the beginning, because they're attack, you know, they get trapped in this basement with this food monster.
Yep.
Okay, but they seemed rather nonplussed about everything. So they're like used to everything.
Yeah, they've done this. It kind of picks up kind of in the, they're kind of like Supernatural, like, but without being brothers.
Okay.
So that's the vibe that I got from that opening scene with the food monsters, that like, oh, we've traveled this far and we've found this, and they go to open the door and like, oh, I'm not touching that doorknob.
Yeah. But
and that's like the Supernatural vibe that I got, like I mean, Supernatural, they're brothers, but
yeah, but it just didn't seem very clear to me that this is something that they're used to and they do a lot, and they had some sort of connection with this like parapsychologist that's a TV star.
Yes.
And he comes into play later on in the movie, but I really didn't get their relationship with that guy. Okay. And there's some very interesting themes in here about what this drug does, you know, and the idea of extra dimensions. And like you said, I think when you had spoken about it once, you know, try looking out of the corner of your eye at this creature that's in the cage that you can't see if he's looking fully direct on it. And that idea of, you know, these other dimensions being right on the periphery of people's sight, you know,
yeah,
is intriguing, I guess. But I honestly, this movie just does not come together at all for me. It's just I will recommend people watch this only because there's some insane things in here.
Yes.
But I cannot fully recommend it. To me, it's just another mild meh. You know, it just didn't work for me.
That's right.
But I can certainly understand why it would work for you and appeal to you. It's all for me. Walter?
All right. I had another little theme going on this week with my yay or nay. The first is Troll Hunter. I thought I was going to like this more than I did.
No!
Like, they had me at the beginning where they're like, first off, it's a found footage movie, and that's hard for me to get into to begin with. Like, the Blair Witch Project, I liked Chronicle, and, you know, things like that, but, like, for the most part, like, found footage movies are really hard for me to really get into. So I'm watching it, and I'm like, alright, well, let's see how this goes, and then, like, you see the first instance of the trolls, I'm like, alright, that's pretty cool.
You know, tell me that the guy running out of the forest yelling, "Troll!" is hilarious.
It is hilarious. But then after that, the movie just kind of, the rules regarding trolls, they just seem to like keep adding like different rules. Like, which one of you guys is a Christian? What is, you know what I mean? Like, the trolls can smell Christian blood. What, you know, how come you didn't tell me this? You know what I mean?
But that's the tone of the movie. The tone of the movie is so tongue-in-cheek
And I didn't really like the monster designs. Like, the trolls weren't,
really?
They didn't look like, they looked goofy. I mean, and I just couldn't get into it on those things. Like, and in fact, like, I was like kind of like checking in and out of the movie as it was going. I'm like, yeah, I'm not really feeling it.
That's a shame.
You know what I mean? And then at the end, you know, I thought the press conference at the end was a nice touch, where they were talking about like why there's power lines, you know, up there is to keep the trolls in. As it was kind of gave me like toward the end, it kind of gave me a District 13, you know, vibe. They want to keep the trolls in these. In these areas, but they're getting out, and as a result, you know, they're getting rabies and whatnot. So I was like, eh, it's a meh. I won't nay it, because there's some cool parts here and there. Overall, though, I kind of lost on me. Kind of meh.
I loved Troll Hunter when I first saw it. I know I could see what you're saying about the creature designs. I thought the designs overall were good. I thought the CGI was a little shaky because it is a lower budget movie. But, I mean, I had a lot of fun watching this movie. Just a different, just like Tim said, it's kind of over the top at times. It's definitely tongue-in-cheek. It's not meant to be taken seriously, you know, in any sense of the word. But if you're looking for just like a B-movie vibe, you know, revolving around gigantic trolls. Then
and one, I mean, the last one is gigantic.
Yeah.
Ginormous. I mean, just like the size of a mountain.
Mother of trolls.
It's odd. I thought it was cool. Like, I thought they some of, I mean, the effect's definitely shaky, but there was some that were really good. Like, the one where they're driving in the car, and you just see the foot just come out in front of the car. I thought that looked fucking fantastic. Like, I don't know. I think it's worth watching. I would definitely give it more than a meh. I'd say yay on it.
Yeah, see, I just couldn't get into it.
That's cool.
Another movie that I actually adore, this is a rewatch for me, is Big Man Japan. This movie is awesome. It's a documentary, you know, style movie where this kind of everyman is being interviewed by a camera crew, and he's kind of a put upon guy. His wife's not, you know, terribly attentive to him. His kids don't terribly, you know, don't give him very much respect, and he's just kind of he's kind of a bummed out character. And he gets a phone call. He has to go to work, so he goes to the power company, in which case they electrocute him, and he becomes big, like Godzilla size big. And he has a club, and he has to protect Japan from aliens.
What's up with the hair?
That's what happens when he gets electrocuted. He turns in, he gets like those weird tattoos all over his body. And he doesn't want the job, that's part of it. It's a genetic thing. His father was a big man, and on and on. So it's an inherited thing, like you're born to this bloodline, you're going to become the next big man. And he does not want to do it. And the monster design in this are pretty wild. Like, there are, like, some pretty, you know, crazy monsters. A warning, this movie goes completely off the rails at the end, and it's absolutely hilarious to me. And even though I knew how it was going to end, still laugh my ass off when the movie ends. This is a yay for me all the
how
way.
How did you ever hear about this movie in the first
place? I heard it from another... I heard it mentioned on another podcast, from hopefully one of our new listeners, Chris Tabor. He mentioned that he saw it at a film festival, and I managed to dig it up on DVD at when Hollywood Video was still in business. So that's the first time I saw it, and I fell in love with it. And now it's available on video around here, so I got a copy of it and decided to sit down and pop it in. And this movie is just a lot of fun. Like it kind of, when you would talk about like Cabin in the Woods, like deconstruction, it's kind of like, not a deconstruction, but like a what if, like, all right, so you have this giant protector of Japan, like Ultraman, but doesn't want to do it, and his only weapon is this club. And, like, the people are, like, somewhat pro big man. Most of them are like, you know, we don't need him anymore. And then there's a hilarious thing where his father gets out of the nursing home and becomes big. It's cool. It's okay. A yay all the way.
All right. Hermano?
Okay, I only watched one movie. It was a first-time watch for me. I believe it came out last year. Starring Bane, Commissioner Gordon, the girl that was on the hunt for Osama bin Laden, the guy who was committing torture in Zero Dark Thirty, the kid from Transformers, the kid from Chronicle. Who else was in this?
What are you watching?
Whatever. It was Lawless. I know Tim has seen this. Have you seen this?
I did see Lawless.
Okay. So, all right. Well, we can all speak on it. Basically, Lawless is a movie, according to IMDb, set in Depression-era Franklin County, Virginia. A bootlegging gang is threatened by a new deputy and other authorities who want a cut of their profits.
Killian Aldridge is the bad guy in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it also had the guy who lost his memory in Memento.
And the hero in Space Jail.
Yes. I thought this movie was okay. I can see where Tim's coming from. It's nothing special. It's kind of just like a slice of life of what it was like back then for people living in the backwoods, making moonshine, along with a bunch of other people in the area. And I thought it was fine. I mean, I felt like everything was kind of one note. Like, everybody was just a very stereotypical character. Like,
especially when Bane starts talking.
Yeah, like, he started to soften a little bit for me at the end, like, towards the end of the movie, but he was pretty much the same throughout. He didn't have, like, an arc, really. He was just kind of this guy who's really set in his ways. And, you know, his brother was very, you know, the tough guy throughout the whole movie. Didn't really have much to do other than be the muscle.
And tell me why any woman is in this movie.
I couldn't tell you why Jessica Chastain is in this movie.
Other than to show her.
Unless she's just based on a character in real life, because I think this is based on characters that actually lived. So it's based, I guess, somewhat on a true story. I don't know how much creative license was taken with the characters, but Jessica Chastain doesn't have much to do. Gary Oldman has even less to do. I don't even know why he's in the movie. He's just kind of like a side character that goes nowhere. Guy Pearce, I thought, was freaking awesome in this movie. His character was just kind of an over-the-top bad guy with like a strange look to him.
And what about the motivations, especially at the end? I don't want to spoil it, but especially when somebody walks towards a group at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes no sense
to
me.
It doesn't make sense. I don't know that that's what actually happened in real life. If it is, then that's, you know, that's what happened. I mean, they have to depict it, right? It's part of... I mean, there's a little through line in this movie that speaks to legend. Like, these characters were considered... Their family, I guess, their family name was, I guess, legend to the people of the surrounding area. And you know, these kids obviously go down the line, and they're the new generation of this name they carry. I forget what it was. It began with a B, I believe. Bangarak or something like that.
I've already closed the page. I don't care.
Well, anyway, like, I get the... I don't know that it was ever explored, but I get the sense that maybe Tom Hardy's character was trying to live up to the legend of his family name throughout the movie, and so was his older brother or whatever. And the only person I just didn't really get in this movie, and it was kind of just a very stereotypical character, was Shia LaBeouf, like kind of somebody who's also trying to live up to the family name, but I guess his physicality is not quite at where his brothers are.
You know, is Mark Strong is the brother in this, right?
No, Mark Strong is not in this movie.
The guy with the curly hair.
Yeah, I don't know his name. He was in Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forget his name. Jason Clark?
Yeah, he's the crazy brother.
Okay, so, yeah. I remember now, and thinking back onto it, like they were trying to go with a Godfather vibe of the brothers' relationship, and Jason Clarke was the like trying to be the the crazy brother, you know, who would always go off the handle and he'd beat up Rocky's wife.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's what I thought that they were going for, you know, for that whole relationship between the brothers. But it's just,
I can see that. I mean, I kind of bought in on the relationship of the brothers. I mean, he's a little brother. He's kind of a little squirt. I mean, physically, he doesn't look like he's even part of the same family. Like, I just felt like, you know, he's obviously trying to prove himself, and it's kind of one of those one-note characters. Like, I got to prove myself to my brother, and I'm going to go out of my way and do things that probably aren't very smart to show them that, you know, I can handle, you know, anything life throws at me, or, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of in between a meh and a yay. Do we have something? No? I have to go one or the other?
Well, I gave things a mild meh, you know, so...
I would give this not a... I'd give it, like... A meye.
Little yay.
Why? Well, you did like this movie, right?
It was alright. Like, I'm in the same boat as Hermano. It's like, it didn't wow me. I was like, whoa, I gotta see this again. I saw it once. Alright.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm right there. It's, I don't know. It's ultimately one of those movies that I'll forget in a month.
Probably less than that.
I mean, I've already forgotten, like, mostly what, like, I'm like, oh yeah, she is in that. Oh yeah, he is in that.
Oh, and also the girl from Cinderella is in this. Not Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland. Sorry.
All right, now it's time for Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. I will go first. I will talk about a little movie called Violet and Daisy. It looks like it's going to be released in June of this year. IMDb says two teenage assassins accept what they think will be a quick and easy job until an unexpected target throws them off their plan. Stars Saoirse Ronan, Alexis Bledel, and I saw James Gandolfini in this as well. Oh yeah, Danny Trejo as well too.
I wonder who the bad guy is.
No, it's James Gandolfini.
Really?
It looks like Danny Trejo, based on the trail, looks like he might be the person that puts them up to the job, you know. The vibe that I got from this trailer, the way it was shot, the way it was cut, The Professional. it looks different. I really liked the way this trailer is cut. I really liked the shots they show that really have some unique angles and symmetry to them. I like the concept of it. You know, young girls. That I mean, not only did it remind
the concept of young girls.
these younger girls, you know, as assassins. I mean, that's a pretty badass idea, you know?
It is.
It sounds almost like a Japanese anime type idea, right?
It does. It sounds like it could be a very Asian influenced, yeah, you know, type movie.
But actually, it felt very European. The director is Jeffrey Fletcher, and I'm looking up right now what he's done. He was a writer on Precious. And this is his first directing job, and this is also written by him as well. So, yeah, I mean, always look for newcomers, you know, coming on and displaying their talents. And the trailer really caught me, so I'm hitching my wagon to this one. Walter?
Well, I'm going to hitch my trailer once again to Pacific Rim. I saw a second trailer for it recently, and if this movie, I swear to God, someone's going to get punched in the balls repeatedly if this movie fails in my eyes. I can't see how this is going to miss with me. The new trailer, it's all black, and you hear, you know, the voiceover, and then you hear, you know, GLaDOS, you know, there's a kaiju level 3, then you see him and his partner, they suit up, and then you see, like, their suits are full of fluid. I'm like, that's like Evangelion! And then you see them walking, and the head drops in. I'm like, that's like Transor Z! This is going to be awesome! And then you see, like, the, you know, some more of the robot fighting, and I'm like, this is just going to be, I can't wait. So, obviously, I'm hitching my trailer to this one big time. You can find the trailer on YouTube, the full HD trailer.
Or wherever your internet is sold.
Exactly, wherever internet is sold. But, oh my God, this better not let me down, I swear to God. Pacific Rim, yay all the way. The Hitchin, I want this.
You're already yaying.
It's gotta be a yay. It's gotta be. I'll be so mad if it's not.
July 12th, you got 2 months to go.
Spitz is killing me.
Hermano?
Okay. So I was scouring trailers on iTunes. You know, I feel like I've already talked about Man of Steel and Star Trek and all that crap, and I was looking for something that maybe I had never heard of.
What the fuck?
So I found a movie called Assault on Wall Street. Unbeknownst to me, I'm watching the trailer. And I'm like, don't say it, Tim. Don't spoil the surprise. I was like, this looks kind of interesting. What is this? Starring Dominic Purcell, Edward Furlong, John Hurd.
What is this?
Eric Roberts.
I've heard of this before.
Jim is an average New Yorker living a peaceful life with a well-paying job and loving family. Suddenly, that's the entire synopsis. Directed by Uwe Boll.
What?
I had no idea. I was watching the trailer and I was like, this looks kind of shitty.
Actually, there is more to the synopsis. It says, suddenly everything changes when the economy crashes, causing Jim to lose everything.
I was watching this trailer and I was like, something about this trailer. Something is... And then I saw what's his name? Clint Howard.
What the hell?
Clint Howard? I was like, no. I look at the director, Uwe Boll, I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, god damn it. I'm inadvertently watching the Uwe Boll trailer.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Hilarious to me.
I'm so glad you went last.
You know what?
It's gonna laugh.
In all honesty, at first I was like, okay, it looks kind of like the cliche action movie, you know, guys had enough, takes a vigilante stance and goes out and tries to set things right and blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay.
We both take a phone down.
Nobody can understand what you're saying except for dogs. Keith David is in this.
Keith David is also in this.
Michael Paré, did you say him? He comes back.
No, I didn't. I was floored. I was like, It actually, you know what, I'll be honest, it actually looks like he's trying. It doesn't look like Blubberella where he just kind of threw a movie away and said, fuck this.
I'm telling you, Rampage.
Maybe. I mean, it definitely has that Yui Bowl look to his film. Like, I feel like he's stuck to a certain aesthetic.
Does insert coin logo flashing on screen during the trailer?
No, it didn't go as far as that. I didn't actually recognize... I didn't see Edward Furlong in the trailer, but as soon as I saw who was in it, I was like, man. Was he in that? I don't know. I didn't see him. Wow. But it kind of looks like a Falling Down-esque movie.
That's what I was saying when I was laughing.
It kind of looks like that type of movie. Maybe, like Tim's mentioned, Rampage. I haven't seen it, but from what I've heard, it sounds like that type of movie where, you know, an average person has finally had enough of maybe the government keeping them down or something, or in this case, Wall Street taking his money on a bad investment. I don't know. I couldn't quite tell what the movie was about, other than a guy was mad at some people in suits and he's going to shoot them.
Okay.
Am I itching? Not really. I just wanted to bring up the fact that I unfortunately saw this trailer.
So. That's hilarious. Oh my god.
Oh, I don't know how we could top that.
I don't think we can. Show's over. Tune in next week.
Alright. Let's get into our discussion of Iron Man 3.
Some people call me a terrorist. I consider myself a teacher. Lesson number one. Heroes. There is no such thing. You don't know who I am. You'll never see me coming.
Mr. Stark. Today is the first day of what's left of your life. I'm gonna offer the choice.
Do you want an empty life or a meaningful death?
The plot. When Tony Stark's world is torn apart by a formidable terrorist called the Mandarin, he starts an odyssey of rebuilding and retribution. The director, Shane Black. The actors, Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, Don Cheadle. Hermano.
Hi.
You had hitched your wagon to this trailer for this movie a couple of months ago.
Yep.
And do you still want to be hitched, or do you want to ditch this film and bitch about it?
I only just watched it yesterday, so I haven't had a lot of time to let it simmer and think a lot long and hard about it. The way I feel right now is I was kind of disappointed. Basically, I think when I initially hitched to the trailer, I think you guys will remember that I said, this looks like a darker take on Iron Man. This looks like a grittier story. Like, maybe they go on the Dark Knight route where, you know, they're not going to treat it like he's, like, this goofy character anymore. Like, maybe he's done some growing up and he's taking his life seriously type movie. What I got was pretty much the Avengers minus all the other Avengers. It was a lot more of the comedy. It was kind of a carryover from all the comedy from Avengers, except way more, I thought, in this movie. Like, I felt like I was watching an 80s sitcom. To an extent, like, without the laugh track. Like, I just felt like... I've seen this done already. Like, I've seen this... I felt like the character hasn't progressed. Like, I've seen this so many times that it just felt like me watching the same movie again with different action beats and stuff like that. Ultimately, I was really looking forward to one type of movie, and I think that's probably why I'm so disappointed in the movie that I did see. And I don't know. It just left me wanting a certain movie, and I got something else.
Wally?
Let's see, I don't recall. Did I hit my trailer to this back in the day? I don't recall.
I don't recall really either.
I remember being rather excited for this movie to come out, and then seeing, like, the trailers, you know, as they were released, and getting pretty pumped up for it. And then I went to go see it, and I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Sure. Sure. And then at one point in the movie, I went, go fuck yourself. Seriously. Seriously, dude. We'll talk about that later. Overall, this didn't feel like an Iron Man movie. The end credits, I think, sum it up best. It's an action spy movie. Because you barely get to see Tony Stark in the suit actually doing Iron Man things. Even in the big finale, he's still not doing Iron Man things. Like he did in the first movie where he's, like, stopping an incursion overseas and flying around and doing, you know, fighting bad guys. This is, This is Tony Stark running around like, you know, Tony Stark as MacGyver. It's the best way to put it, because, like...
You know, one thing I will say, I think that Tony Stark did more detective work in this one film than Bruce Wayne did in the entire Nolan trilogy.
I would say so. That's why I felt like a spy movie to me. And, like, at the end with the... My favorite part of the movie, the end credits, I was like, well, you know what? I watched a spy movie. That's what I did. I didn't watch Iron Man 3. I watched something with Robert Downey Jr. as a kick-ass super spy, because he does some pretty impressive stuff, not in the suit.
I don't think I'm as down... I know I'm not as down on this movie as you guys are.
Yeah, I saw your Facebook page. I almost commented on it. No, save it for the podcast.
Well, first off, I did like that Brody / Iron Patriot had more to do in this movie.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that, because I think the idea of his character is really cool, and I love Don Cheadle as an actor. I think he played the role very well, and I just like the overall fact that he had more to do. I loved all the action set pieces in this movie. I thought they were great. The attack on the Stark compound, you know, was really well executed. I think that the staging of that whole thing and how it played out was really, really cool. I thought the final action sequence was really amazing. And when we get into spoilers, how everything goes down during that final action sequence, I really found very intriguing. I liked it a lot. Also, Pepper. I liked Pepper in this movie a lot, too. Once again, she has more to do in this. And, it's featured in the trailer. She does don the suit. When I saw it in the trailer initially that she had put the suit on, I was really held. You know, I was like, oh no! I hope that they pull this off well. And the way that they pull it off, I think is really well done. I think it's really cool. There are some issues with this film. It's not a perfect film, but it's. I think that the positives of this movie, outweigh the negatives. And also, when it comes to people's motivations, like Killian's motivations. And what exactly his full realized plan is, it's not very clear, when you think about it. As you're just being fed the information in the movie, you just kind of go with it. But when you really step back and think about it, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But to me, it didn't matter, because this is ultimately a comic book film and a superhero film, and even if some of the plot points aren't all that clear, or there are holes, to me it doesn't matter, because everything else kind of outweighs all that.
I totally agree with you that it's a comic book film, and that's all they decided to treat it as, because they didn't really take any chances. I felt like there was something that they really could have explored that they didn't, that I was really upset that they didn't. The whole idea that Tony Stark is dealing with a sort of like anxiety issues and post-traumatic stress disorder from the events of the Avengers that took place in the Avengers. I felt like if the movie had gone darker and kind of dealt with that and how it's affecting his life nowadays and stuff like that, like I thought that there could have been a much better story there.
Right. I wish that they embraced that a little, the PTSD, and if Disney or Marvel had allowed them to include his alcoholism story, that would have made for a more interesting angle.
Exactly. I agree. But they decided we're not going to take any chances. We're just going to rehash and do a lot more of the same. Like we're going to show the relationship dynamic between Tony and Pepper yet again, how he's the wild and crazy snarky snark guy, and she's the straight-laced business lady.
Well, wait a minute. I think that they handle this a little bit more in depth than in the other two films, because this is the one where they're, fully committed now. And, she's moved into his place.
Yep.
So,
but we already got that in the Avengers.
Not nearly as much.
Like, it's set up that, and then in the... I just felt like... It's like just constantly showing me the same thing, but in a different movie. I felt like Tony was still the same character, except in this one, he was like up to 11. Like, I felt like where he was in Iron Man 1 to where he is now, holy shit, he's like a walking punchline. Like, that's all he is. Like, he's nothing more. Like,
Is that his character in the comic books?
No.
No?
Not at all, actually. Tony Stark is... The way he's being... Even back in the day, he was never like this, like, one-liner type character. But, I mean, he's always a fairly... Because I have a bunch of old issues and whatnot. He's a fairly straight-laced character. Like, oh, I've got to save the day. You know what I mean? And and whatnot. And then, and now he's kind of like
Spider-Man,
Batman almost, where he will like look at a situation and then kind of extrapolate different scenarios to, and then try to cover, you know, every single one. And
well, I think that works well for what they set up.
Yeah,
in the movies.
In the movies, he's not. He doesn't really joke all that much. You know what I mean, like he does. He doesn't make. He doesn't make those like kind of like.
You mean in like, the comics he doesn't joke?
No, not at all.
Yeah,
he's pretty serious. He's really serious in the books and in the stories. I mean, I can see them taking some liberties and giving it, you know, some levity, because, you know, Tony Stark can be pretty grim in the books, you know, books himself. So that, you know, they let Robert Downey's, you know, comedy chop shine through with the quick, you know, the quick comebacks and whatnot. But he's the Iron Man in the movies and the Iron Man in the comics are two very different people.
Now, yeah, there are some issues I have. Like, Tony Stark is like this global superstar in these movies that they've built up.
Yes.
This character, he's a global superstar. So, why does the media and the enemy only show up after he announces his address on the air? Don't you think that everybody would know where he lives? Like TMZ and the like, you know? Well, everybody would know. They would see him flying in and out every day. You know, so they would know where he lives.
Well, he's also Tony Stark. He's also like a brilliant you know, technological master. He could easily wipe his, you know, his address from, like, you know, most records, so they wouldn't, he doesn't necessarily need to be found. Like, no one would be able to find unless he wanted them to be found.
It seems to be in a pretty populated locale.
I don't buy that. That house does not, like, scream, like, seclusion. Like, that house is, like, pretty much on the side of, like, a mountain or something.
A cliff,
yeah. And it's really specific looking. Like, it doesn't look like any other structure I've ever seen. Like, and it's huge. Like, people would know, like, this thing. And plus, he had that reporter over in, like, what, the first movie?
That's right.
People know where he lives. Like, him screaming his address, I didn't buy that.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense to me.
That just that one day that he's going to have helicopters flying over and checking on him. Going even a little further, there's a point in the movie where he's trying to, be incognito. I don't buy that. He's, like, one of these characters that's worldwide. Everyone knows what this guy is. He's Iron Man. He's out in the open as Iron Man. Like, I am the person that's in the suit.
Would it be spoiler to say which part of the film that is?
No, because I don't think it's anything, like, I mean, you mean when he's in the town, the small town?
Oh, he's trying to be incognito in the small town?
Like, literally by wearing a hat. Like, and putting on, like, a poncho or something. And I'm like, really? Like, none of these people in this bar, as soon as he walks in, is like, holy shit, Tony Stark.
My other issue with that, too, is, you know, everyone's, you know, saying, oh, Tony Stark is dead, Tony Stark is dead. He's obviously paying for the things that he does in the movie, and he didn't have money in his pockets. You know,
I was wondering if Tim was going to have a problem with that. He had such a problem with Batman.
Well, when, like, things are going on, like, he doesn't look like he packed a lunch or anything.
When you have such a fantasy element universe, I'm willing to overlook that. But when you ground something in reality so much, like Christopher Nolan did, then I have problems with it. Yes.
The thing is, like, what does he think? Like, I mean, all right, he might have cash in his pocket to buy the drink in the bar, but other things that he needs to get, he would have to go to like an ATM at some point. Yeah, I don't think Tony Stark walks around and just like, oh, can you break this $100 bill? Can you break this $100 bill? Like, he doesn't.
That seems to be a bit of a nitpick.
There's a lot of nitpicks for me in this movie. Like, I just thought a lot of the...
I've got questions later on in spoilers.
Like Wally said, I didn't like a lot of the parts where I felt like they were really trying to do something in this movie very specific. Like, they wanted to take him away from the suit. You know how they'll always do that in movies, especially superhero movies where an actor's face is masked.
I actually really liked that. I really liked his...
People don't go see this movie to see Robert Downey Jr. anything.
I would disagree with you, because with conversations with people on Twitter, there is no replacing Robert Downey. All the talk is about Robert Downey Jr.
What's the name of the movie?
Yes, I understand it's
Iron Man. If this movie was called Robert Downey Jr., no one would go see it.
Yeah, but it's Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. Exactly. And I'm telling you, now, it's not how I feel. It's how I've heard a lot of people speaking that the main attraction of this movie is Robert Downey Jr., and that he is irreplaceable, essentially.
I don't believe that, because we haven't seen anyone else play the role. To say that, I bet somebody said that originally when whoever played an iconic
role. Sean Connery played James Bond.
Should no one else? I mean, everyone said Jack Nicholson was the iconic Joker, who is now.
Yeah,
exactly. You know what I mean? Like, we haven't seen anyone else play Iron Man. It's too soon to say that.
When Heath Ledger was cast as a Joker, you can go back online and find tons of pages of people like, this is the end of the franchise.
I was one of those people.
This is the stupidest idea ever.
I'll admit it. I was one of those people. I didn't go online and type anything out, but I was like, you know what? I don't know. Like, I've only ever seen this guy in, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Was he in that movie?
No, it
was
10 Things I Hate About You.
He was in First Night. I'd never seen him in anything else.
That scene that you're talking about where he's in Tennessee, you know, there's a kid that's featured in this. I mean, a lot of the times I have reservations when kids try to, you know, are put in the film to help out the protagonist. I mean, fortunately, it didn't seem like this kid got in the way or too annoying or anything like that. What about you?
It was a small part, but I obviously didn't like that scene because it was all played for comedy.
This is Disney's hand yet again mm-hmm. in this whole thing. We need to have a kid in here. It could have been anybody.
A precocious little kid who's giving it to Tony just as much as Tony gives it to anyone else. And I'm like, oh, this screams like Disney Channel.
And there's no chemistry in any of that thing. It's not like Tony sees a mirror of himself inside the kid. You know what I mean? He just kind of is like, yeah, I need this. And where's that tuna sandwich? Where is it? You know what I mean? And he's kind of push him around. I didn't buy, like, that whole, like, everything with that kid was just flat, flat, flat. I mean, like, this, you could just take these scenes out and shorten the movie by, you know, however long.
Well, that was part of his investigation, you know, his detective work going to Tennessee in the first place. Now, the thing was, when he landed in Tennessee, you know, yes, Jarvis does mention something very briefly, but there was such a separation between that arrival and previously when he had said that he wanted to go to Tennessee to do some investigation because of another explosion, you know. So I just don't think that there was enough. Give me at least another line saying his reason again for being in Tennessee, because so much time had elapsed and so much had happened in between those two events that I needed to be reminded again. It took me a couple minutes to realize, oh, that's why he's here again.
Yeah,
and that's what happened.
But
that's
again, right. his trip to Tennessee, completely unintentional.
No, it was intentional because it had already
not been... at the time, because he wakes up in the suit and goes, where the hell am I? He's like, in Tennessee. Why did you bring me to Tennessee?
Because it had been programmed into Jarvis's system. That's why.
But his trip to Tennessee would have been intentional later on. He was going to investigate that later. But when the attack happens, he just gets ejected out of the house to Tennessee.
Because Jarvis saves him.
Yeah.
And Jarvis had been damaged at that point, so it was going on some sort of last request, you know?
Yeah, then that's why I'm like, I happen to be here, I might as well investigate.
Well, that's how he gets there, is because it was after the attack on his compound, his house.
And my problem is that he gets there not as a conscious decision. It's not like, I need to investigate. It's like sudden, like Jarvis, plan a flight, plan to Tennessee, I'm going to go investigate that later. And then the house gets is like... So you brought me here?
And I didn't have much of a problem with it.
It seems like he just kind of fell into it. Like, was supposed... Like, he wasn't... He was being reactive instead of proactive. And Tony Stark is more of a proactive...
Well, he had no choice. He was pretty much unconscious.
Well, true, but I mean... Jarvis is an AI. Jarvis would...
But he was damaged. The house... He was... You know, his systems were in the house. He was... You know, he hadn't had any time to repair himself because he had just been attacked.
We'll get to that point later, too.
Okay.
I seem to remember a lot of people when Dark Knight Rises came out complaining how you don't see Bruce Wayne in the Batman costume for the first, 40 minutes or something like that. And there were a lot of complaints. There were. But I'd say that he's out of the suit way more than 40 minutes in this movie, especially towards the middle.
Yeah.
Holy crap, man. I was so, this is bullshit. Like, when did he all of a sudden get all these fighting abilities? It's just all of a sudden happened to him. I mean, they do show at one point in his little... a garage or whatever, he has like that little training doll or whatever, and I'm like, is that all you're going to show us to cue us in on the fact that now he can actually defend himself out of the suit? Because later on he fights these two guys and I'm like, how is he even holding his own? Like, he, in the other movies he was pretty much nothing out of the suit. He was completely dependent on the suit, but now out of the suit he's completely capable and he's holding guns and he's like...
Exactly.
I don't know. He's totally able to handle himself. And I'm like, when was this established? Like,
exactly. It's never established in the movie. It's one of those things that, like, if you read the comics, you would understand, like, where he's getting it from. There's two different routes. One is that the Iron Man suit has combat reflexive software in it, so that when he's in the Iron Man suit, he can fight. You know what I mean? Like, he's, you know, fast and, you know, the computer's, like, calculating where all the threats are and whatnot. And then he also trained with Captain America at one point, but they never show that on camera. Mm-hmm. So you can't really... If you read the comics, like, oh, or I guess his pain is, you know, he's now he knows Captain America from the Avengers. So I guess maybe his training with the captain has paid off. You know what I mean? but you wouldn't be that. That's like Captain America-esque fighting that Tony Stark's doing in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is why I was like, oh, it's Tony Stark. Well, I mean, later on the comics, he becomes Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm like, it's Tony Stark, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's what he's, this is what I'm watching.
That's funny. Now, about Guy Pearce's character, Killian. Did you have any...
So vanilla.
Really?
He's so, just so... vanilla and boring, like, oh, yay. Yeah. Yeah. All right, if you're going to show me a guy who's supposed to be, like, suddenly, you know, surprisingly be a villain, don't make him look like a villain the minute he shows up in the, you know...
You know what that reminded me? His very, you know, his intro when he has, you know, he's hunched over on the cane and has long hair, and he's looking really geeky, kind of reminded me of the Green Lantern, the Skarsgård character in the Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I totally got a vibe out of that, you know.
Yeah, I'm like with Wally. He seemed very just kind of blah, very stereotypical guy who's scorned and comes back later and has this anger building in him over the years to, and when he finally has the ability to go after, you know, Tony Stark, he takes advantage of it. And I don't know, it just felt like very just like, oh wow, I've never seen this before.
The way the trailers are set up, it looks, it makes it seem like when Tony, puts his threat to the Mandarin, that it's spurred on because something happens to Pepper. Yeah. That's not the case. Yeah. It actually happens to Happy.
Yep.
And the way that scene is shot, I had no problem with, you know, Happy following this cohort of Killians, you know, and finding out what he's up to. And, you know, you find out he's giving this serum to this former soldier, you know, and just trying to, you know, he's on a fix. He's almost like a drug addict.
Yeah.
And, you know, it all happens in front of the man's Chinese theater, and there's a big explosion, and that's what Happy gets injured.
Yeah.
And that's what spurs Tony. To me, that kind of was, you know, subverted my expectations in the bad way, because I was like, oh, this... I understand that you're close to Happy. You know, he's been around for a long time. But this is what spurs you on?
Yeah.
To go and seek revenge on the Mandarin? As opposed to something that... What we all expected, I think, happened to Pepper. You know?
See, I read that scene differently. I read that as that he wasn't actually angry at... Like, that wasn't what was pissing him off. I felt like that was just like a veiled thing where he was actually just angry at the media constantly hounding him. Like, as to why he's not taking action, why hasn't he done anything about this? Because after he's like, after he takes he gives that whole speech about, I live here and you know, this is all good old-fashioned revenge and blah, blah, blah. I think he was making a commentary on the fact that that's what people want. They want blood and guts, and they want him to just go out and just kill this dude. And that's when he takes the guy's phone and breaks it. And he's like, that's what you would want me to do, isn't it? He's like, bill me for the phone. Like, I took that as completely, like, he was upset, obviously, about his friend getting hurt. But I think he was more mad at the fact that he's constantly hounded by media all the time.
It's an interesting take on it. Also, the way that scene is edited, you know, they show later on like the three or four shadows of people that were killed, you know, yep. From the blast. But the way that scene is edited, you really don't get the full impact that people actually died, you know?
Not because they always cut away when anything graphic is going to happen.
Right, but I mean, I've seen other PG-13 movies where they show people getting engulfed in an explosion or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of a nitpick for me about this, but...
It's a completely bloodless movie. I mean, it's a Disney movie. I mean, people get shot, you never see any blood. And you do see a few people get shot, which I was actually surprised that, you know, it was actually Tony Stark doing some of the shooting. I thought all the scenes with Jon Favreau were brutal. I thought the opening to the movie was pretty bad.
Oh, really?
It felt really... Like, I know I've said it already, but it really felt like I was watching, like, some kind of 80s sitcom or something. Like, the whole thing with him hopping on top of Robert Downey Jr. when that explosion goes off, and, like, all that stuff was just played for comedy. And I was just like, every scene he was in was pretty much a comedic scene. Even when he's in the hospital, I felt like they were just... Anytime he's in a scene, they're making fun of it. Like the Downton Abbey thing on the TV. Anytime Jon Favreau was involved, it's totally got to be a comedic scene.
Is he comedic relief in the comics?
In the comics, he's like Tony Stark's best buddy. Uh-huh. Like they hang out, like, and also in the comics too, it's Happy and Pepper that are the romantic item.
Oh.
And that whole scene with A Man's Chinese Theater is actually kind of a riff on a story based on the extremist storyline, where Tony can control any machine, any machine that's active, he can control it with his mind. That's what the side effect of Extremis is for him. And Happy gets attacked by someone who's trying to kill Stark, and they fight, and he beats the shit out of him. And at the end, he gets him and the bad guy both tumble off a scaffolding, and Happy sustains a severe head injury that basically does him in. He's in a coma, and at the end of the story, Stark is like praying, and you see him like using his power to turn the life support machines off, because Pepper basically says like, he doesn't want to live like this. He told me himself like, you could do this, and I would never have to know. And so that's what that whole scene is like. And in the thing, Happy is kind of a fairly cool character, because when he fights like that last bad guy, he's fighting a supervillain, and
in the comics
he's fighting a supervillain, and he beats the fuck out of him. He's like, I used to train every day at Patty's down in Boston, except for Sundays and holy days of obligation. You see him like drill him up like he's a boxer.
So he's more of an essential character than comedic relief.
Yeah, he's more like he's someone that that Tony talks to, confides in.
Was there anything else you guys wanted to get in before spoilers?
No, I think my stuff might be spoilerific.
I don't know, I didn't really care for the Gwyneth Paltrow stuff in here. I think there's an element to this movie where I felt like they could have taken another chance, and they didn't. But it's a spoiler, so we might just get into spoilers.
All right, spoilers. So you'll notice that I haven't really said much about the Mandarin.
Oh, I've been keeping my mouth shut about that.
Because the way they set up the Mandarin as this Osama bin Laden-like person, the dictator, if you will, with this huge army, is a great idea. But it turns out that he's actually just an actor. He's hired by the extremist organization, by Killian, essentially.
AIM is Killian's organization.
Yes, AIM, sorry. Wally, thoughts?
Oh, I almost walked out of the theater.
Why?
Because you've shown me all these trailers of, like, I consider myself a teacher. I'm like, this guy's going to be awesome. And then, knowing the Mandarin story, he's got 10 rings that can all... Each ring can do something different. At one point, the rings are magical. Then later on, they wrote it so that it's actually alien tech. And I was like, this would tie in perfectly with the Avengers. Like, he found something in the portal that came out when Loki's aliens like attacked New York, and that's how he became the Mandarin. So he's got these cool rings. And like, now that him and Iron Man are gonna fight, it's gonna be like technology versus technology. But he's also not wearing a suit, and he can do all these cool things. And then it's just. It reminded me of Sir Ben Kingsley in Blood Rain.
Blood Rain?
He's in Blood Rain.
Yeah, I know.
In a cheap cape and vampire fangs. Uh-huh. And I was like, wow, this is... All right, well, I guess when you've already won an Oscar for another performance, I guess you can pretty much do whatever you want, especially when you've been knighted.
And you know? When you played Gandhi.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he's free to do whatever he
pleases. So you didn't care for the reveal? That he was
this reveal.
He was just a pawn, if you will.
I hated it. Literally an actor. Yep, I was hoping that he was, like, Tony's going to turn the corner and see the Mandarin, like, they're like, are you looking for me, Mr. Stark?
I understand what they were going for, and I think, obviously, it's a great idea if you're a Killian to kind of do a little rope-a-dope to the entire world and set this guy up as the patsy, pretty much. Commendable idea, but just once again, I'm going to feel like I'm nitpicking this movie to death based on just the laughs they were going for. The way that reveal is handled is completely just, once again, another scene just, I'm here, we're really trying to make you laugh here. Because he's a completely a buffoon. Like, he comes out of a toilet after just taking a shit. He's all like, I'm an old pervy man now. Like, I'm a freaking anime character, pretty much. I just was like, man, what the fuck is up with this movie?
Now, I got what they were going for. It's kind of updated. It's relevant for today's, political climate, if you will, or the way some people think about you know, politics and who's actually the puppet master and all that kind of stuff. You know, I got it. You know, I don't think I would... At that reveal, I was kind of more just like, eh, okay, you know. I wasn't truly disappointed. I wasn't truly excited about that concept. I was just like, all right, you know, it kind of makes sense.
I also just want to say, too, like, I don't have any kind of fond feelings for the Mandarin. I'm not familiar that much with the character. I'm not one of these comic book nerds who's like, no, he is a certain way and must only be a certain way. Like, I have no fondness for the character whatsoever. But I think the way he was set up in the trailer and built up in the trailer, I thought that character actually being that character would have been more interesting than making him just, you know, the guy, you know, it's like a decoy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you've complained a lot about the comedy in this. The comedy actually, for the most part, worked for me because, well, first off, because Robert Downey Jr. is able to pull it off so well. He's very charismatic. See,
I think it's one after the other. Like, it's almost unbearable for me because it's like, it's so obvious what they're trying to do. It's like, hey, we're just going to keep doing it over and over and over and over and over. Like, rapid-fire jokes just to try to make you laugh. And I honestly, I didn't watch it with a packed house. But I think I heard a guy maybe laugh once in the entire movie.
Yeah, my theater was pretty into it. You know, it was pretty full, and there were a lot of people that were laughing at all the jokes.
I think the only one that the guy the only joke that the guy laughed at, and it almost got me because I kind of saw it coming though, was when he breaks free of those guys. He's like, "I'm gonna punch you in the face right now." But later on, there's a guy he's about to shoot, and he's like, "Whoa."
I love that part.
I hate this job. Like,
I don't like people. They're really weird. I want to go home.
These guys are weird. I just want to go home.
That was great.
It was funny. Like, the guy laughed.
What most henchmen should be doing. Like, oh, why am I going to stand here and die for this lunatic who could kill me? The stress level must be, like, insane being a henchman. Like, you could die at any moment. At this point, like, nope, I'm done. I'm leaving. Can I go?
I just felt like it was very, like I kind of saw it coming, like, because of the scene that preceded that. Like, you hear him just kind of joking with the guys, and I felt like this whole movie was just one big joke.
Well, going back to the action set pieces, the one that was featured very heavily, especially in early trailers, was the Air Force One, people flying out of the Air Force One. And I thought that was really well done. Also, something unexpected at the end when he gets hit by the truck and it falls into pieces, I actually blinked a couple of times and I'm like, wait a minute, what just happened? I thought that they were going to pan over and reveal, like, Tony Stark on the highway or something like that, like oh, what the hell, you know? But they revealed that he was remote controlling it, and I thought that was a really great idea.
Because he had the remote control stuff on him when? Exactly.
I liked that scene.
He had overall. He had just broken into the house. He built all of his, you know, his gimcrack weaponry, the air gun and all that. Rescues Rhodes with what's left of the suit.
No. He had stuff because at that point he had already, you know, broken free of the compound. You know,
yeah, but his headpiece isn't in the suit.
It isn't? No. How do you know?
The headpiece isn't part of the suit. It, when he's wearing the suit, he's in the suit. He wears the headpiece when he needs to control it remotely.
I don't know. I think it can be explained that it was in the suit.
I don't buy that for a second. Because you see him, like, walking around the house with it on. He doesn't wear it all the time. It's not in this actual suit.
I was pretty much checked out at that point. Like, I was just like, I don't even care what's happening right now. Like, I thought that sequence was pretty good. I thought the attack on the house was pretty good. The end fight scene, I always feel like the Iron Man movies kind of Edward like a thud, like, meh.
Oh, really?
Like the action scene. Like,
oh, my God, no. I'm sorry. That whole concept of just jumping off of ledges and having the suit wrap around you, to me, is fucking incredible.
No. That's cool. I liked it better.
I liked this.
I thought everything fine.
I liked this finale. Like, overall, it was better. But, it didn't have much to live up to because I didn't think, like, the finale of the first one or the second one were very good. They were just really short and kind of anticlimactic.
Oh, especially the second one.
Yeah, the second one especially. But the first one, I mean, it was just kind of fighting another guy in a big suit. And the second one, it was like, we're going to fight multiple guys in big suits, followed by another guy in a big suit. And in this one, it was just like, the one thing I didn't like is, like, where the hell were all these guys coming from? All these extremist guys. Like, where were all these guys when he needed to catch Tony Stark? He's going to send one or two guys.
It's just like any other Bond. Everybody? It's just like any other Bond movie where the henchmen come out of nowhere. You know?
Exactly. My guess is he needs it for his endgame. This movie is a spy movie. This is not an Iron Man movie.
But talking about the endgame, Killian's endgame What was it? I have no idea.
I have no idea what it was.
Obviously something involving Miguel Ferrer as the vice president, because his the vice president's daughter is missing a limb.
Yep.
So obviously, killing the president in order to make the vice president the president, and able to sign everything into law.
And do what he wants. He's got a puppet.
Yeah, that was his master plan. He was just trying to get extremists to get passed and make it so that he'd make a shit ton of money off it to militarize it.
Very similar to Sherlock Holmes 2.
You should ask CTU. I'm pretty sure there's an easier way to do stuff like this. Happened all the time in fucking 24.
That's funny.
Okay. The scene I was talking about, that I this is the closest I've ever come to walking out of a theater, I think, is when Gwyneth Paltrow seemingly dies.
Yeah.
That scene, I kind of knew they weren't going to let her die.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
Because of the way it was handled, it was just kind of really quick and just went kind of quickly. But when she comes back, I was like, oh, my fucking word, man. You guys take no chances. Everything is happy ending, jokey, jokey, joke, happy ending.
Well, the way I knew that she was going to come back is because that scene where she falls goes way too quickly.
Yeah.
I was hoping for that scene to last a little bit longer, because they had done some slow-mo. Especially in that opening action scene an early action scene when, the attack on the house. There's a lot of slow-mo during that, which I think is executed well. But I thought that we're going to do that again in that, where she's falling, in order to, make the moment a little more dramatic. But they didn't, and that's when I knew exactly what was going
to
happen.
There was definitely no weight to that scene. There was no emotion. Right. It was just kind of oh, I didn't catch you. You fell into a pile of fire or whatever.
But it didn't ruin it for me, to be honest with you.
It ruined it for me. I was like, fuck off, man. Take a chance. Fuck's sake, man. I hate movies that are just so straight and, just follow the line, toe the line of every other movie. We're just going to be Marvel, happy, happy, joy, joy movie.
And what about Killian becoming this, super soldier who's able to breathe fire and all that?
He does it once.
Oh, okay.
He breathes fire once, and it probably my favorite scene with Rhodes. So we're breathing fire now. Is that what we're doing?
I loved how Rhodes had a lot
Rhodes
to do.
Rhodes was so cool in this movie.
Yes.
I wish I could see more of this. Where he's in the suit and he's don't open, don't open, don't open. And then finally the suit's just going to open automatically because of the failsafe.
Yeah.
And he's all right, let's do it. And he comes fly kicking out, takes out one guy, takes another guy. But obviously they're enhanced soldiers, but so they take him down fairly quickly. But I was that's what I wanted. That's he's in the Air Force. He would know how to fight. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where is S.H.I.E.L.D., by the way, during the
Okay.
Where'd they go?
We'll get there.
I need to know this.
We'll get there.
I didn't like that stuff with him, especially towards the end. I felt like it turned into a buddy cop movie. This is obviously the dude that wrote Lethal Weapon movies. I felt like it just turned into a buddy cop movie.
That's
a
good point.
It was it felt like Murtaugh and Riggs it all over again.
For those who don't know, Shane Black wrote the Lethal Weapon movies.
I just said that. Thanks for listening.
Well, you didn't mention Shane Black.
Whatever. I don't know. I'm going to feel like I'm the most emo guy. I hate funny stuff. I just don't like this brand of comedy, I guess.
A brooding Batman, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah,
films,
brooding
me.
Guys who are sad and just lost their girlfriend. Man.
Tragic.
But I don't know. I think it all stems back to when I first saw the trailer, and I really felt they were going to deliver something different, and they totally backtracked. And
would you ever give this movie a second chance down the road?
Honestly, no. I think I'm going to treat this movie a lot like I do Iron Man 2, and I've only seen it 1.5 times. I probably will not rush out to see this movie again, because I don't feel on a second rewatch I missed anything. I feel like I knew exactly what this movie was when I was watching it for the first time, and I don't think I'm going to get anything different out of it on a second watch.
Molly, was there anything else you wanted to mention?
So you have...
Oh, yeah.
You have Pepper on a perch, and she's going to fall to her death. We've already established that with a simple gesture, Iron Man, Tony Stark can have an armor wrap around anybody. And he couldn't be with all those suits flying around, he'd be save Pepper. You know what I mean?
Well, she had been injected with that stuff, so maybe that...
He's still in control of the suit.
Yeah, but no. The way that they had set it up is that it's she was the only other person that would be able... He would be able to do that to. He wouldn't be able to give it to any other person.
But he gives it to Aldrich. He puts Aldrich in a suit.
Yeah, that whole thing was kind of willy-nilly, because, I mean, at first he tells Rhodes, like, no, the suits are only
for me. But he's already given it clearly
to Pepper. He's given it to Pepper. He's given it to Aldrich. I'd assume that Don Cheadle's character's suit is only coded to him, but yet that other guy puts it on. I'm like,
the president.
Aldrich, the president,
puts it on.
Well, that's after they hack into it or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, they throw that logic out the window. I mean, if these things are supposed to be so secure, how is anybody just jumping in?
I think it would have been far cooler to see her, like, fall off and he saves her with a suit, and then you've got two Iron Men.
No, Hermano, you're right. If this was the Nolan universe, I would have a lot more problems with it. But this is the Avengers universe, and I don't have as many problems with it.
I don't buy
Speaking
that.
Of which, where'd they go? Like, we keep mentioning the Avengers in this movie, and yet they're
actually
not there.
Actually, the very end of this movie where Pepper has the surgery or whatever to get the stuff out of her, he has his surgery to have his reactor and shrapnel removed.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
That takes away his whole purpose of being Iron Man. And then don't get me started on him throwing the fucking arc reactor into the ocean? That is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life! You've given away the power source for the world's most sophisticated body armor, which, if you go back to Iron Man 2, was used by a guy who just built one out of fucking Tinker Toys! So, are you stupid? Are you...
You know what the ending reminded me of when he was driving away? It reminded me of Batman Begins. You know, when the house is destroyed and he's just driving away?
See, I don't buy what you're selling, Tim. Like, your whole thing where, like, oh no, this isn't a kind of a fantasy universe, so I can buy when things are stupid.
Yeah.
But if it's set in reality, I can't buy when things are stupid. Right. Like, that doesn't make sense. You treat movies like movies. Like, some people treat comic book movies as more than a comic book movie. They treated this like a movie that's for families and young kids.
Okay, mm-hmm. You know, we talked about, like, why Jarvis might have been damaged in the house attack or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's how many suits of armor in the fucking basement that Jarvis could be in?
Yeah.
42.
And none of those are destroyed. They're all perfectly
fine.
No, those
weren't completed yet. They were still in the process of being built.
But they're still perfectly battle capable as opposed to the Mark 42.
They hadn't been completed yet.
I thought those were all suits that he was building because
they're all prototypes.
Yeah, like, but he's built them. They're functional. Because he says, like, I haven't been able to sleep, and this is what I do when I can't sleep. I go downstairs and I build things, and that's how he keeps busy and stuff like that. So that's how he's built all those suits. I thought there was a point in that movie too where there was a point where I felt like he could have called those suits a little bit earlier than he did. Not much earlier, because he doesn't get the suit back until right around the time he escapes. But right from that point, he could have called all those suits to come out. I don't understand why he waited till the last minute. Unless you use a movie logic where, of course, the grand finale has to include all the suits, you know what I mean? Like, to last action sequence.
So I had put out the call, unless there's anything else you guys want to
ask. I want to ask a question. Alright, so at the end of the movie, he's got all the suits exploding and blowing up over the water? So isn't that shit going to get in the water at some point? Like, there's gotta be, like, some weird, like, radioactive shit that's inside those things.
that's a bit of a nitpick.
You know what I mean?
Wally works for OSHA.
just saying.
After what happened in New York City in the Avengers, I don't think it's a big deal.
Well, so we have Tony Stark just blowing shit up around the air, right? Fine. I guess
fireworks, it looks pretty for his moment with Pepper. Pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus.
Alright, so we had put the call on Twitter to people to give their reactions to the film.
Uh-huh.
So, what is this? At Dark Projections says, would have been fascinated by deeper focus on Stark's PTSD.
Thank you.
Iron Man 3 as Hurt Locker and a post-Avengers character study.
Exactly.
At Neil Ramji, where the fuck were the other Avengers when all the Mandarin shit was going down?
Thank you.
Well,
they keep getting lip service in the movie. They keep talking about them, and yet you would think that the Avengers would come help out a buddy who just saw their house get blown up on national TV.
Where is S.H.I.E.L.D.? The only one I could say, like, hey, I'll give you a pass is Thor, because he obviously lives on a different dimension. So, like, everyone else should have been around, though. It's weird.
But it is an Iron Man movie, and are you going to say that with every single individual movie from
The only one that we can't say it about is Thor. You know what I mean? Like,
well, what about when he comes down to Earth?
That's what he's down here. He doesn't stay. Thor doesn't tend to stay on Earth terribly long, as opposed to Iron Man, who actually has to physically live here.
So you're gonna have a problem with that in Captain America if it's only Captain America.
If like crazy shit happens in Captain America, and S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't get involved, there's no mention of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It's like world threatening.
Like world threatening, exactly. Like that, I would have a problem with.
Yes.
Why?
Because they established like, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s like
they established themselves as a team. Why wouldn't the team S.H.I.E.L.D. is basically all like team this, up on this?
Exactly, and the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s like our homeland security. Which they're everywhere as it is. Like you call in a threat anywhere, Homeland Security shows up. You know what I mean? Like the whole marathon bombing, Homeland Security was down here along with, you know, the FBI and whatnot trying to track, you know, these dudes down. Where's S.H.I.E.L.D.? Like this house just got destroyed. Like the Avengers lost a core member, potentially have lost a core member of their team. Like I would at least have liked to have seen Coulson.
Well, supposedly he's dead.
Or is he?
Or is he? Based on a TV show that there it says in production. At Jay Whip, I'm not saying this to bash the Avengers because I fucking love that film, but I loved IM3 so much that I'm willing to say the following unbelievably subjective comment. Iron Man 3 is better than the Avengers. Gasp.
Who said that?
At Jay Whip.
Fuck off. I even like the Avengers better than this, and I didn't even like the Avengers that much. Like, I just felt like this movie was ultimately pretty dumb.
Did anybody else other than me feel absolutely fucking cheated in my post-credits?
No.
I did.
Oh my god.
I felt completely ripped off.
I felt like I wanted to rip what little hair I have left out. Because I was like, I waited fucking like 10 minutes for that. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. I felt like it was like one last slap in the face. Like, before I left. Like,
I would have liked to have seen something along the lines of, like, him talking to somebody.
There's your mention of the Bruce Banner right there, helping him out with his PTSD as a therapist.
Yeah, but he's not a therapist. But here's the thing, I would like it better if, you know, he was at, like, a different therapy place, and he goes in the waiting room on the way out from the actual real therapist, and finds Fury there saying, we need you again to, you know, make the bridge to Avengers, but now there's also Guardians of the Galaxy coming out, and Iron Man's part of that team, too.
That's going to be post-Avengers 2, though.
But wouldn't it be cool to see at least some sort of, like, callback where he goes and he sees, like a raccoon in a trash can, and he's like,
get the hell out of here. It's too soon for that.
The other thing is, too, is it didn't connect to any other movie. Like, it wasn't a setup for another movie. It was just kind of a throwaway, ha-ha, look, laugh at this last scene, ha-ha. It's not even funny.
At WBL Lost Soul says, Iron Man 3 is very entertaining, but would have preferred less suit jumping and more Tony Stark struggling with his demons.
Thank you, once again.
I think I have one more here. Oh, at William Dale, is So-So a brief enough review? If yes, then that's my review of IM3.
I think that's the perfect... Is that two-word review? So-So?
Yeah. And I think finally we have at writer Andrew, the worst Marvel film yet, an even less coherent narrative than even The Dark Knight Rises.
That's a little severe.
He says, check out CinemaFix for my hour-long rant. This is Andrew Johnson, who I had chatted with about Die Hard.
Yeah, I definitely don't think this movie was better than The Dark Knight Rises, that's for sure.
He also writes, I keep waiting for someone to explain the plot to me and how fire breathing enters the picture.
Well, that's because he's got a tattoo of a dragon across his chest there. And that's supposed to be Fin Fang Foom, who's a dragon that breathes fire in the Marvel Universe. Word.
Tim, you gotta admit, man, ultimately this movie's pretty dumb.
It's not the smartest movie, but it's very entertaining.
It's very dumbed down.
And it met my expectations pretty much.
It's very, like, bottom of the line, like lowest common denominator type.
I don't think it's that low.
Comic book movie.
No, because it's better than Iron Man 2.
I don't know. I couldn't even say. I haven't seen Iron Man 2 in forever.
And I wasn't even that completely down on Iron Man 2. It met my expectations for the Marvel Universe. What they have set up in the previous six films, it met my expectations.
I am more of a DC fan, so I already come with a little bit of a bias, but I don't like what they're doing right now, and I am really, really fearful that this is the way the Marvel movies are going to go from now on. I really hope they don't do this to Captain America. I can't see them doing it, really, this type of comedy with Captain America and Thor.
Promo art for Captain America, and I hope to God that the promo art looks freaking phenomenal.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. Because Captain America was actually my favorite of the previous Marvel movies, followed by the first Iron Man. But I really hope that this is not the continuation of what's going to happen as far as the tone of the movies.
Grades?
As an Iron Man movie, it's like a D. As a spy movie, it's like a B. So I'm going to meet it in the middle and give it a C.
Hermano?
C minus.
I give it a B plus. So B plus, B,
C.
C, and C minus is a C plus, C plus average?
C plus
average, then. All right. excuse me. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Follow us on our first time... let me start that over. Or you can follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing Holy Motors.
That is the First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch. Beast out.
So I've been having some Twitter beefs recently, and I even got accused of trolling.
What have you done?
Well, it's about Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Okay.
I don't know how familiar you guys are with Star Trek movies.
I always forget which one's which.
Four is the one where they go back in time to 1980s and
1985, and they save the whales.
Yeah.
That silly thing.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's a terrible movie.
It's not good, but I did win a costume contest based off that movie. I went as Earth Spock, like, to school. So I basically just wore a bathrobe, a headband, and my dad made Spock ears for me.
That's funny.
Third place. Which goes to show you just how powerful that movie was.
Hermano, have you ever seen that movie?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through.
Yeah, you don't.
Captain, we've got whales here!
Oh, man. So I just don't get, because it started off with somebody saying, hey, that's a really good movie. It's a really good movie. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah, it's silly.
It's the stupidest Star Trek movie.
I would challenge him and say, you know what? You take the crew, you take the Enterprise completely out of it, and you say, a spaceship must go back in time in order to save the whales.
I mean,
show him that same movie without Star Trek. It's a silly movie.
You have Scotty talking to a computer mouse.
Yeah.
Saying, computer, you know, and asking the computer to do something.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking dumb.
Exactly.
I don't get the...
I mean, you wouldn't have learned that in, I don't know, Starfleet Academy, like the history of, like, computers. Considering that you're...
That's a good point.
Considering that you're the guy who's in charge of the engines on the most powerful starship known to man.
That's a good point. Oh, it's just so dumb. I don't get it.
No, I didn't. But so, what was the accusation?
Well, you know, that I kept, you know, saying, you know, complaining about it, and somebody, I guess, got frustrated enough to say, "This is either," I forget what he said. You're either trolling or I don't know exactly. Maybe something like you don't know what you're talking about or whatever. You know,
The Voyage Home is a silly ass movie.
Yeah.
Considering you had you know, the one about V'ger, part one, then you had the awesome Wrath of Khan, then you had the Search for Spock, which I thought was kind of a nifty, nifty twist, and then you have whales?
Well, that's the thing, too. It's pretty cool, though, how 3 through 4 are direct relation, you know?
Yeah.
2, 3, and 4. So 3 and 4 are direct sequels of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
That's really cool how they did that,
but
except that they have to go back in time.
Back into the same whales.
And after that, whenever they had to go time travel, it just kind of wore on me.
The slingshot effect, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, one of these is not going to work. And the sunscreen's just going to rip the Enterprise apart. And everyone's going to die.
I miscalculated by 1/1,000,000th of a parsec or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You just see like Scott just going, oops. And then Kirk goes, what do you mean?